I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Story. The United States has edged closer to the current conflict between Russia and Georgia with the delivery of food aid through one of Georgia's smaller ports.
The U.S. Coast Guard cutter Dallas docked in the Georgian port of Batumi carrying 34 tons of humanitarian aid. The arrival there avoided Georgia's primary cargo port, which is now controlled by Russian soldiers.
We had all the options on the table, and the decision was made to go to Batumi. We wanted to make sure the goods, the humanitarian supplies, arrived in a safe and expeditious manner, and we arrived in Batumi in order to do that.
That's U.S. Navy Commodore John Moore talking with reporters in the Georgian port of Batumi. My guest today is Archbishop Malkaz Tsongelashvili. He's pastor of the Baptist Church in Georgia. His is a small church. Most Christians in Georgia are part of the Orthodox Church. But the Baptist Church has a long history of independence. And so when this conflict began, Tsongelashvili left his studies in England and got back to Georgia as quickly as he could to visit family and his churches.
Well, when the church service was over on Sunday, I went to the Beteli Center, which is a multi-purpose humanitarian center belonging to the Cathedral Baptist Church. And the center was full of internally displaced people. So I sat with them and listened to their stories, what they had seen, what they had experienced. And there were ladies, some of them handicapped ladies, children, mothers and fathers, and they were wounded soldiers. The more they spoke, more released they were from anger, fear and hatred, what they had experienced when the city was bombed, where their beloved were taken away as captives, as hostages, where their cattle was also taken away and everything they had was taken away, their houses were burnt down.
What would you say is the one story, the one person who sticks in your mind from that one listening session?
A young lady from Gori Baptist Congregation who decided to stay during the occupation. There we are left only two persons. This lady in her mid-20s and elderly lady in the neighborhood. So during the day, she would go and take the old lady to her place so that she would feed her and encourage her, and they would stay together during the day. And in the evening, she would take her back home to her bed. And she told me that one evening, when she was escorting the elderly lady to her bed, she was captured by two Russian soldiers and dragged away to be raped. She was beaten up severely, but she managed to escape. She still has bruises on her face and I suppose on her body. But she managed to escape these two soldiers. And while she was making shout and noise, some other soldiers and their officers came and she was rescued. And the way she was describing what she had felt and how humiliated she was absolutely devastating.
Archbishop Malkaz Tsongelashvili says another one of the moving moments of his trip to the city of Gori came when he visited the home of the Baptist bishop and his wife.
They heard all the shelling and bombardments and the fight, and every evening and every day they hear people shooting. People were scared, obviously. Mm-hmm. They came after the Russians occupied the territory. Then Ossetians came and took about 30 people from the village as hostages and started asking for ransom.
Was the bishop even able to stay in his house? I mean, was he himself in danger?
No. Both him and his wife spent 7 or 8 days hiding in the back of their garden. They've got large garden with trees and bushes and the rest of it. So they had not slept in their beds for several days, and they did not bathe. When I came, I saw the bishop being bathed on the veranda of his house by his wife, because they felt uncomfortable to meet their bishop, their archbishop, in dirty clothes.
They must have been happy to see you.
They were both were very happy to see me, but the bishop jumped from the place and gave me a hug in tears, and he was saying, speaking both to me and his wife, saying that, you know, Nazi, you know, I told he would come, I knew he would come. It was very, very meaningful experience.
But how was their state of mind? I mean, had they been able to go to church? Were they holding regular services? How safe was it for them in Gori?
No, they were not holding any church services anymore. All the people were in hiding, and they were trying to not to come together because of the fear. Some of the houses in the neighborhood had been burnt down, and after having had Eucharist, Lord's Supper, and meal, we went around to visit those places and see devastated houses and estates, and met the owners. In the beginning, when we went to those houses, there was nobody. But very soon, people started to come out from the bushes and from their gardens. There was a small group of people who came to talk and share their pain. And the only question they had was whether there was still hope left for Georgians in that land.
What did you tell them?
There is always hope. Although I had some days when I also lost hope. It was the darkest time in my life. And I received a call from my assistant in the church, and telling me that, are we going to lose our lives? And are we going to die? Are we going to become refugees from our own place? And it was the first time I could not say to her, do not be afraid. And I could not say to her that there is still hope, because I myself was afraid, and I myself was left without hope, and I was made captive by the fear.
What about anger, though, Archbishop? I'm just wondering if knowing what you know of the history, if there wasn't a part of you thinking, you know, about the way that the leaders in Moscow were scheming to persecute people in Georgia.
Obviously, there was anger, and there is still anger. But when they started rolling tanks down to Tbilisi, I was obviously very angry, and I realized that unless I did something, this anger was going to destroy me, destroy what I am as a Christian, as a human. And I had a very, very strange image in my mind. My anger was narrowed down to one particular person, and that was a Russian president, Putin. This is a man whose hands are in blood of Chechens and Georgians and even Ossetians. If you bear in mind the tragedy in Beslan and Chechnya, he's got blood on his hands. And I was full of anger against him. But I realized that unless I did something, this anger was going to destroy me. And in my imagination, I stood in front of this chap, embraced him, and I told him, do not be afraid. And I kept saying, do not be afraid, to him. And the more times I said, do not be afraid, smaller he became. He's not a large chap anyway, but he became even smaller. Obviously, that experience in my imagination did not make Putin less evil, but it has certainly made me less evil and free from anger. Because I do understand now, and I do realize that there is always hope, regardless of all that is happening with us.
I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Story. Archbishop Malkas Tsongelashvili had just 1 week in Georgia before returning to his studies in England.
Even though I've come back, mentally I am still very much there, and my mind is fully occupied by things happening there. And also something that enabled me to come back emotionally was a decision to be the voice for the voiceless, to organize humanitarian and relief aid to those people who are suffering now and are going to suffer during the winter, and this winter is going to be really, really tough. Also, for me, this is a kind of act of repentance. In 1999, during the Second Chechen War, there was influx of Chechen refugees to Georgia. And our church was the only Christian church and only religious group that opened the door of the church to the Chechen refugees. We did a lot, but from this perspective now, I think that we did not do enough.
Whatever you did for the Chechen refugees back in the late 90s was not going to win you any friends with the Russian authorities.
Obviously it did upset Russians that we did gave shelter and did support them. But this is not the point. The point is that this is a matter of our humanity and our human solidarity.
Well, I agree with you, but only up to a point, because my limited understanding of being a churchman in the former Soviet Union is that your job is both religious and a little bit political. I mean, for generations, it's taken both religious and political courage to maintain under the Soviet Union. And I'm sure your father and your grandfather had their moments of difficulty trying to lead the Baptist Church. But even today, the Pentecostals, the Evangelicals, even the Catholics, Episcopals, they would all be somewhat suspect by the Russian authorities and the Russian Orthodox Church. So, I mean, you're not just an opposition religious leader, you're an opposition political figure. The reason I'm trying to make sense of this, Archbishop, is I'm wondering if you worry at all that you might be prevented from returning to Georgia because you'd be seen as a troublemaker.
If the pro-Russian forces do take over, obviously I can't go back to Georgia. I won't be accepted. I have already been deported from Belarus, and in my passport I've got these stamps telling me that I've got no right to go to Belarus and Russia for next 5 years. Mm-hmm. And obviously I will be persona non grata for Russians and pro-Russian authorities if they come. But for the time being, we have got democratically elected government. So the country so far remains to be a isle of democracy in our region.
Do you ever think that your own life is in danger?
Well, my own life has been in danger, well, for ages. And I felt it in the Chechen War. I felt it in the time of religious nationalism in the country of Georgia. And it's there, but it's not so important. I don't think I should be concentrating on that, because I can't afford my actions and my decisions or my movements be controlled by the fear that something is going to happen with me. Although I have already received some threats from certain circles or
is
warnings.
Is that since the warning since the invasion of Georgia?
Yes.
What can you tell me?
Our church is a very small church, but it was the only church who has been outspoken about the real situation. All other churches have kept silence as to what is happening with us. And therefore, it endangers both our church and its leadership.
And while we're in this moment of uncertainty, when no one really knows how far Russia is willing to go, you're studying at Oxford, your mother, your family is in Georgia, your bishops, all your congregants there. What's it like for you to be apart from that?
It is very difficult. It is very difficult. But the things here will not hold me back from doing these things that are important for the church and for the country.
Archbishop Malkaz Tsongelashvili joined me from a BBC studio in Oxford, England. And on our website at thestory.org, you'll find photos of the Archbishop and photos chronicling the Russian invasion of Georgia from earlier this month. Special thanks today to Juanita Clemens, Vicki Lee, and Pastor McKinney for helping connect us with the Archbishop. I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Story. Last week on The Story, I talked with Olivia Helmig about her time on a magazine crew. Now, these sales crews are often made up of younger people who are leading troubled lives. Olivia says the work was long and hard and exploitative, but it took her a while to see that.
These little clues come along the way. You don't know everything at the beginning, and you only find out these little bits and pieces of things as you go along. I heard someone talking about the subject of buying and selling. We were called agents. The subject came up because I had a boyfriend who was on a different crew, and their crew and our crew was traveling together. And I said, well, what's going to happen when we go our separate ways if I want to stay with him, or can I just get hired by this other crew? And they said, oh, no, your boss has to sell you. It was crushing. It's like being told that you aren't real in a way, that you aren't human, that every memory that you have shouldn't be important because your property.
Olivia's story about life on the magazine crew inspired a lot of responses to the program. Richard in Durham wrote to say, if only I'd heard this program 2 to 3 months ago when a disheveled young man appeared at my door and proceeded to tell me exactly what Ms. Helmig related to you during your program. He stated that he was involved in a program to help him overcome his shyness, and the program required him to engage people, strangers, in conversation in order to obtain points towards a financial reward. Richard goes on to say, I callously dismissed this young man by telling him that I was not interested. But knowing what I know now, I'm mortified that I may have had an opportunity to help this child, and he was a child. But instead, I dismissed him and sent him back out into what is probably an abusive and dangerous situation. This is going to stay with me for a very long time. And while I may not get a lot of sleep tonight, I am grateful that you brought this story to my attention. We're always open to hearing reactions from you, suggestions for other stories, or just thoughts about what you're hearing on the program. The fastest way to get to me is through our website at thestory.org. Or you can also write to me using a pen and paper and a real stamp. The address is The Story, 120 Friday Center Drive, Chapel Hill, North Carolina, 27517. Coming up next on the program, a trip back in time to the presidential election campaign in the summer of 1960, and a chance encounter with Kennedy in a California train yard. I'm Dick Gordon from American Public Media. This is The Story.